Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Some guests answer a question and wait for the next one. Shirley B. Novak tells stories, and I'm rather glad she does, because her stories reveal a woman who has spent a lifetime remaining open to whatever might come next. She was told girls don't go to college. She went. She's worked in science, taught, raised three children, built a career in interior design, opened a candy store, and eventually became the writer she dreamed of being since she was 9 years old. Her first novel was published when she was 75. Our conversation takes a few unexpected turns, and I occasionally attempt to steer us back onto the road, but underneath it all is Shirley's absolute conviction that age doesn't determine what's still possible. As she reminded me just when I thought we'd finished, when one door closes, another one will open. Listen now to my conversation with Shirley B. Novak. Have you ever wondered if you've missed your chance to do the thing you've always dreamed of doing? Maybe life got busy. Maybe family came first. Maybe work paid the bills but didn't feed your soul. Or maybe you've simply wondered if it's too late. My guest today would tell you it's not. Over the course of her life, she's reinvented herself again and again. A
And again.
scientist? That's another question later on.
Okay.
Okay, so you've been a scientist, an educator, interior designer, mother, entrepreneur, and eventually the writer. I was talking in the third
Yeah.
person, but now I'm talking to Shirley. So the writer that you dreamed of becoming since you were a little girl. Now, you published your first novel at 75. You're
Yep.
now preparing to release a third not book novel, and firmly believes that as long as you're breathing, there's still another chapter waiting to be written.
Right. I always wanted to be a pole dancer.
Well, my next
That's not
line
going
on
to
my
happen.
intro is, and apparently she's still considering a career in pole dancing. Shirley B. Novak, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
You so much. It's great to meet you. I'm so happy to be here.
And you just blew my opening question about pole dancing. I was going to ask if it was a joke, not a joke.
No, it's definitely a joke. I have two shoulder replacements. I don't have the energy to do that anymore.
I love the fact that it's because of your shoulders, not because of any inhibitions. Is there still one ridiculous thing that you want to try, and not because you'll be good at it, but because it'll make you laugh?
I don't know because physically, I'm afraid to do a lot of things right now because my shoulder, I'm a klutz. And right now I'm suffering from a fractured ankle.
Jeepers.
And that happened because I wasn't paying attention. And I missed a step. And oddly enough, I was on my way into the hospital for eye surgery. And they said I may have to have a bubble in my eye, which means you'll have to be face down for 2 to 3 weeks. So I said, I better get all the laundry done. Right? So I'm running up and down the stairs with a load of wash in my, and I missed the bottom step. And I wasn't able to walk, but I had to get into the hospital because my eye was more important. And so my husband brought me in a wheelchair. I had my eye surgery. And the following day, I had a patch on my right eye. I had a boot on my right leg, and I had a brace on my right arm. And I said, this is funny.
I'm glad you're laughing. What you reminded me of was I did a face plant on the cement in Barcelona. And my only thought as I'm picking myself up and figuring out what isn't bleeding is thank goodness it was after my daughter's wedding, not before.
Oh,
So,
how long ago was that?
oh, it was 10 years. She just celebrated her 10th. So there we go. Okay, let's talk about you. Let's start at the beginning. Talk about the 9-year-old Shirley. What did your teacher see in you that perhaps you didn't see in yourself yet?
He gave us an assignment to write a poem about spring. And he was so impressed with mine that he made me read it to the entire school. And then he took me aside and said, I don't ever stop writing because I feel that someday you're going to be a great writer. And I never forgot that, Mr. Willett. And it was a short poem, and it's actually in the last page of my book because he is the only acknowledgement I gave in my first book. But see, I mean, at 9 years old, that really stayed with me. And I always knew I could write because I would write term papers and, whatever I had to write. I mean, I wrote poetry, but I always loved to write. And when my dad died, I found out a lot about his past, which I couldn't believe. He was an immigrant coming over here from Koretz, Poland. But his story was so disgusting and so awful. And when the pandemic hit, I sat down and I wrote a book. And I had no outline, I had no nothing, but I just kept writing. It was like a hand was hovering over me, telling me what to do. Quick synopsis, he was born in 1904, Koretz, Poland, to a tyrant of a father and a loving mother. When he was 12 years old, his mother died, and his father sent he and his 9-year-old brother, he was 12, his brother was 9, and his father sent them to live in a brothel and said, I'm going to America. When I have enough money, I'll send for you. Who sends their kid to a brothel? So it took 3 years. It took 3 years. And during that time, my dad was raped by a Polish soldier. And that sort of guided his life. He never told anyone. And it took 3 years. And when he finally got to America, he was 16 years old. And his dad said, you're old enough. I don't have room for you. I'm having another baby. He had married another horrible woman, equal to him, and said, go out and get a job. He couldn't speak a word of English. So, he was a very quiet person, but he was very dignified. He was a furniture maker and upholsterer. And he was fabulous at his job, but he never made enough money doing it because he gave it away. But he and I was the baby, and my brothers did not have the same relationship with him that I did. So when I wrote my first book, it was loosely based on his life. And my brothers had no idea, who are you talking about? I don't know this person. And I said, well, that was my relationship. And he was just a very, very sweet guy. And when he died on July 3rd, and his funeral was on July 4th, and we figured no one would come because it's 4th of July, here we go again. And 300 people came, and
Holy moly.
300 people came to the cemetery, and 300 people came back to my house and told stories. They just told stories, and no one knew who this person was. That they would like the family had no idea of the effect he had on his friends and his vendors and the people he came over with from Poland. And he stayed very, very close to some of those men that he came over with, who became pioneers in fabrics and upholstery and anything to do with fabrics and design. And one became Robert Allen, which is probably the number one fabric distributor in the country. And he and my father stayed best friends until he died. So,
So lots of ammunition. Oh, I bet. I want to talk about the books, but that's your current chapter. Can we go back and talk about your reinventions? You've done this several times. Now,
Yes.
did those changes feel brave while you were doing them, or did they just simply feel necessary?
It felt exciting.
Oh, okay, good.
It felt very exciting because my parents said they were Eastern European and they said, girls don't go to college. And I wanted to be an English teacher, actually. And they said, no, you can't go to college. So I worked and I worked. And I saved enough money to go to a 2-year school to get an associate's degree. And a school in Boston were they were offering a medical assisting program, a laboratory science program. And I said, oh, I would love to do that. I don't want to be a secretary. I'm not going to be a secretary. And I took the 2-year program and I had to do an internship. And I did an internship at Boston Medical Center. And there was a research group there that were doing research on the unborn. They were the pioneers in surgery for the fetus. And they put out an ad. They wanted someone with a master's degree. And I only had an associate's degree, but I read everything I could about them. And I went for an interview, and my mother said, why are you wasting your time? They're never going to hire you. They're never going to hire you. Well, not only did they hire me because of my enthusiasm and probably because I came cheap, they sent me to the University of Rochester to take medical school to take a crash course in hematology.
Holy crap.
Now, talk about falling into a situation that I never dreamed was possible. It was incredible. And then when federal funding kept getting cut back, I was the they had to let everybody go, but they kept me because I knew everyone's job. And I'd go into work and there'd be nothing to do. I'd go to the movies. And then a paramedical training school opened up in Boston, and they were looking for someone to teach the medical assisting program. I've always wanted to be a teacher. And I applied and I got the job. And my students ranged in age from 18 to 50. Now I was 23 at the time. And I have to say that was probably the best thing I have ever done in my life because I ended up teaching the medical assisting program and I ended up teaching anatomy and physiology to the dental assisting program and the secretarial program.
Now,
And
did you know? Let me interrupt here. Did you know all this, or were you just staying 2 steps ahead of the students?
no, because when I graduated in laboratory science, I had a lot of anatomy and physiology and
Okay.
biology, and I had a syllabus to follow, and I loved it. I just loved it, and I was pregnant, so I would borrow that. In those days, we had what was called a fetometer, which was like, it was like a stethoscope, but you could listen to the baby's heartbeat. So I kept borrowing it, bringing it to class. So I was a really good teacher. I got pregnant from my students. And after I left, they called me and said, if we find, because by then I was pregnant again, and they said, if we find an evening school class, will you teach that? I said, absolutely. So I taught at night until I had my third kid. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And that's how that happened.
Okay, and then what comes next? I know there was a long career as an interior designer.
Yes. So when my youngest was 3 years old, so that would have been 1982, I hired two interior designers to help me with my house. And they asked me if I'd like to come to work for them. And I said, I know. And I said, well, if I have a baby in nursery school. If he gets sick, I have to stay home. They said, whatever you want. And they were in my town, and I went to work for them for 3 years and got my groundwork done until somebody came in with a gun threatening to shoot them because they were using his money to pay for other projects. And I said, well, this is exciting. I'm getting out of here. No. So I left, I quit, and I had a following. And people started calling me, but I wasn't going to steal clients from them. And I decided I'll just go back to school and I'll get a degree in design. And so I took one course a semester for 9 years
Holy moly,
at
okay.
night, because that was all I could do with three kids. And after the 9 years, I was already established. And I didn't want anyone to know I was just graduating school. But I got my degree, and I've kept one client who has been with me almost from the beginning, and I'm pretty much retired from that right now. It's changed, it's stressful.
Has there ever been a reinvention that didn't work?
To tell you the truth,
That's what I
no,
want. Okay.
because we had built a summer home in on the Cape Cod, and they had a marketplace, and the marketplace had 24 boutiques and shops, but they never had a candy store. And I was looking for any excuse to spend the whole summer there. My daughter was 15, and I said, let's open a candy store. And it was called Simply Sweet. My kids were the most popular kids in New Seabury. And we ended up having, because it was an upscale resort area, we had a lot of personalities come through. We had a lot of famous people in our store. But the best one, Cyndi Lauper, had a house there. And
His girls
she's
just want to have fun.
right. And she said, I'm leaving for Japan, and I read on tour, and I need, do you have any boxes I can have? And I said, they're in my garage down the street. And she said, do you mind if I come over? I said, of course. And it was my daughter's birthday. And my little boy's son said, Cindy, it's my sister's birthday today. Do you want to see what I got her? You know, and Cindy said, let me leave her a gift. And she pulls her own demo tape of True Colors. And she said, I'd like to leave this for Abby, but you have to promise you're not going to call any radio stations with this because it's not coming out till September. This was August or November. And she signed it, and Abby was not home. Unfortunately, she would have died. But so we have her own private copy of True Colors.
Colors.
And she
Oh.
was a doll. She was a doll. She used to come and judge the talent shows for the kids, you know, and she was a wonderful, wonderful, she is a wonderful person. So that was our claim to fame with Cindy, because we put together all these things. She was going on David Letterman the following night. And we put together all these chocolates and candies for the everyone at David Letterman's. And I told her how to present it. And she sits down with all these bags of truffles and candy. And she hits herself in the head and says, she told me to take it out before I presented it to you, and I didn't listen. And we were laughing. It was, yeah. So I guess that, and I had it for 7 summers.
Oh, wow, okay.
Until my kids didn't want to spend the summers there anymore.
Oh, jeez.
You know, they got older. But it
Yeah.
was, yeah, I was known as the candy lady, and my kids were popular because they'd give away candy.
I bet. Oh, dear. No, Mom, she followed me home. He followed me home. Can I give him a
Yeah.
candy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I can't say that I've ever had a dull time.
Yeah, no, for sure. Do you know when it's time to move on, or do opportunities just present and you
I
say yes?
honestly, yeah, I honestly think it's just leaving your mind open to, I mean, I will tell you, I spent 29 years in a very abusive marriage. Not physically abusive, emotionally abusive. But he was a dentist. He was an endodontist, and he was a gambler that I did not know about. But he was manic depressed, and he was bipolar, which we didn't know about, way, way back then. And it was easy for me because I had all the freedom to do what I wanted. I brought up my children because he'd go to work, he'd come home, and he'd sleep. That was it. He'd come home at lunch to sleep, dinner, go to sleep, maybe go to a midnight movie. And it was very freeing for me because the days were the price I paid for the nights I had. But I never, never, never stopped smiling and keep being a positive thing. And I became very successful as an interior designer, and he couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand it. It was like I was too strong for him. But divorce was never in my wheelhouse of opportunity. I couldn't do it. My parents would have killed me. But he had a mother that abused me terribly, and two brothers that did the same. And finally, thanks to Colin Powell, I divorced him. Now, how did Colin Powell end up in my story?
Well, I'm actually going to ask you to save that story because I know how it comes into your story, and I address it later on what in our
Okay.
conversation. So it's really
Yeah.
wonderful to have you say something, and it's like, I know about that. Now,
But you know what? I look at everything as a story. If I can get a story from something and I know I've done nothing wrong, I think it's fabulous.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm all over that. Now, just briefly, we'll just stay, I guess we'll leave the marriage with the question of what helped you reclaim your own life? Do you think, looking back, do you know whether there was a moment, or was
Yeah.
it just
He wanted me to stop working.
okay? Yeah, that would do it.
Or he said, either you stop working and stay home, or I'm going to leave you. And I said, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It came out of your mouth, not mine. And I said, I'm never going to let him retract that.
All right.
And I didn't.
So I wanted to ask you sort of through the eyes of a woman who is listening, and they may recognize, pieces of your life in their life. Not the same circumstances, but relationships where they slowly could have lost themselves. You didn't. C can you give any advice for someone to begin finding themselves again?
Growing up in an extremely negative, depressed household, my mother was clinically depressed.
Okay.
My brothers and I talk about this, and we say we saw what we did not want to become. So it worked in reverse for us. And I think everybody has to be true to themselves before they can learn to love anybody else, and you have to find it in you to stop and think about I am a human being. I am a worthwhile human being. What can I add to my life to make me happy without, because women, I think, tend to want the people around them happy, and they lose themselves in that. They want their children to be happy. They're always doing for their parents, their children, their bosses. And I think the most important thing is to be true to you. Love yourself. If you can't love yourself, you can't expect anyone else to love you. And everybody has a talent. There's not one person on this planet that doesn't have a talent for something. And I think you have to stop and think about what that talent might be. And don't be afraid to try it. Because in my world, the failure is not in trying and failing, the failure is in not trying at all. You know, you learn from your failures.
And it's interesting. Just recently, I had that chat with a guest over, is it failure or did you just not succeed? Because to me, there's a difference. People say, "Oh, I failed at that." If you've learned from it, any of those things, it's not a failure. You did not succeed, perhaps. But there's all
Right.
sorts of reasons why you may not have succeeded, and it's not a failure.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when I finally got divorced, people came up to us and said, "You know, we always thought you were very different, but you were always happy. And so we thought you had the perfect marriage." No one could believe that we were getting divorced. You know, don't wear your feelings on your sleeve. You know, people don't want to be around negative people. And if, you know, just make it so people want to get to know you. They want to know who you are. And my friends go back to when I was 5 years old. I have the same friends then that I have now, and they're all over the country. But we come together in July on the beach that we all hung out at. And if they're not dead, then they come. It's
And throughout all of this, because you've just sort of drawn a very windy road, was the writing part always just there?
yeah.
And
Yeah.
life may have taken you in different directions, but it was always there.
It was always, I love to write. And then I realized I could just sit down and write. Without planning or anything, a story just came out of me. And when I finished my first book, I did not want to self-publish, but I couldn't very well go to Random House or Simon and Schuster and say, "Here I am," you know.
You
So
did
I
it before, why not?
well, I know, but I didn't. I didn't. I knew I had boundaries. With age comes boundaries. So I didn't want to self-publish, so I researched and found hybrid publishing. Now, the difference is that a hybrid publishing company will take money from you, but this particular company doesn't take a dime from you until you make it back. And I really thought the price tag was very low considering they did everything. And so I sent them my manuscript and they said, "Oh, we'll get back to you in a few weeks." And then they called me in 3 days and said, "We would like to sign you." Now I had like about 100 query letters printed out, and I only sent one, right? And it was fabulous. It was a fabulous experience. I never suffered. I mean, people tell me stories. My second book, I had a traditional publishing company come to me and say, "We understand you're writing another book. We'd like to keep following it." And as soon as it was completed, they signed. No, this was a bad experience. And after 8 months, we used to have like a group meeting with all their authors once a month. And after one of the meetings, I said to the publisher, the head publisher, "You've had my book for 8 months, and I haven't heard from you once." I said, and I worked with a hybrid publisher, and he called me every week. And he said, "Then why don't you just go back to your hybrid publisher?" And I said, "Okay." And we parted our ways. And I went into independent publishing, and it was on the bookstands in 12 weeks or less. It was very quick. But one of this man's authors contacted me. She found me crying hysterically, and she wanted to let me know that I had dodged a bullet because this man owed her like thousands of dollars that he never paid. And he was abusive, he was a misogynist.
Wow.
And so it was a good thing. And I'm with an independent publisher now called BookLocker. And they're going to publish my third book. I've already signed with them. And they're amazing. I can't even praise them enough for what they do and who they are. So it was lucky.
So over the years, now I've always said that I'm very fortunate because no matter what comes my way, I land on my feet.
Right.
But it sounds almost as though this is totally random. I've seen a video about squirrels and how no matter what they're doing, flailing around in the air, their eyes bead in on a place and that's where they land. And that to me is sounds like you see what you can do or what you can be or where you're going, you focus in on that goal and you get there.
So far.
Now, for someone who's feeling stuck at, I don't know, 62, 68, 74, whatever it is, what's the very first step that you'd suggest they do toward building their next chapter?
It's hard because after you're past a certain age, a lot of companies don't want to hire you because they feel that you don't have any longevity. I think it's really important to know who you are and what you can accomplish, number one. And if there's something that interests you, take a course in it or research it. Or create it. I mean, I've been taking a creative writing course at the local college for 10 years, I think. And we're now down to, there are eight of us in this class. This is it. And we've become a family. And they had to, because we've been there for the same amount of time. And when you write, you have to be honest. And we trust each other enough. To be honest, we can say anything we want because what happens in class stays in class. So one of the classmates recently passed away about 6 months ago, and we said, how are we going to get we have no one to replace him. There's absolutely no one to replace him, and so we've been minus him. But our class is out of the curriculum now because we won't let anyone else in. I just found someone a couple of days ago that would be perfect in our class. Happens to be a neighbor of mine who's a retired judge. And he's the nicest, he's great. And so I presented it to everybody and they're very excited. I said, we need more testosterone in this class anyway. So they're really pumped and he's pumped to join. So we will now have our full class back. And I
Have
trust
all
him.
of our listeners messaging you and saying, can we just become friends? Because it sounds like an opportunity will open up if I know you. Oh, dear. Now you published your first novel at 75.
Yep.
That in itself is remarkable, but was there anything that surprised you, not about writing the book, but about yourself? Or did once again life just opened up?
No, what I think what surprised me is that a lot of things in my book would embarrass a lot of people. And I said, this is, I opened myself up to the world. I held nothing back. And that surprised me. And I don't know where that came from because being embarrassed is part of life. And nothing embarrasses me anymore. And it didn't with my first book. I just let it all hang out. And the second book, because it's on human trafficking, I mean, my husband asks me, like, what goes on in your head? What goes on in your mind? I'm like, because I'm not really nice person, but I've gotten into some really kinky stuff in that book. And it's like I made it up.
Yeah, that's your story and you're sticking to
That's my story, and I'm sticking
it.
to it. Yeah. I know. I know,
So,
but.
I was going to ask this question, but maybe you've answered it. I was going to ask if writing sort of helped you understand your life, but I don't need to know about your kinky sex life.
No, I haven't had a kinky sex. I
I don't know.
really, I'm about to turn 80.
Oh my goodness.
And,
Okay.
next.
You have pole dancing. Who needs sexy or kinky sex? Okay, let me ask you this. What does success mean to you now compared to 40 years ago?
Success is being happy. Success is being satisfied. Success is knowing that you've contributed something to life and that you haven't shied away from it, because life can become intolerable at times. I mean, I went through a period 18 years ago. My son almost died. He was on life support for 2 weeks from a bad diagnosis. And my medical training saved his life, actually. Because when the doctor at a local hospital, again, it was the 4th of July, and we couldn't go into Boston. And I took him to a local hospital because he had a stomach ache. And they did a CAT scan, and the doctor said, "Well, you've got a little diverticulitis. We're just going to admit you for the weekend and give you morphine for the pain. You'll be fine." And I went in that weekend early, and they were doing rounds, and one of the doctors said, "Well, you've got a little perforation, but the antibiotic's going to close it up. And you have free-flowing air. But we're not going to bother you with the CAT scan today. We'll do one tomorrow." And as soon as I heard free-flowing air, I called my best friend's son-in-law, who was chief medical resident in Boston. And I said, "Jeffrey, Andrew has free-flowing air." And he said, "Can I have an ambulance with a crash cart? Pick him up and take him in here. You won't have to go to emergency. I'll have an operating room waiting for you." And the doctor at this hospital would not release him. "We're perfectly capable of taking care of your son. We're not releasing him." I said, "Are you out of your mind? You have to release him." And the ambulance came and they loaded him up, and the doctor would not give me discharge papers. But the nurse followed us to the elevator and said, "Thank you for taking him out of here." By the time he got into Boston, he had a golf ball size hole in his colon, and he would have been dead in 2 hours. His organs were starting to shut down. And it on July 4th, all the hospitals, residents, attendings, and doctors switch. That's the day the new ones come on and the old ones go off. We were so lucky. We got Jennifer, the new attending, and she worked on him. And he ended up with a temporary colostomy. Thank God it was temporary. But he almost died. And I sat by his bedside and I said, "If you don't wake up tomorrow morning, I'm not waking up either. I can't, I couldn't take it."
Yeah, I can't imagine.
After he when he was in the hospital, he wrote, when he was in a step down unit, he wrote a pamphlet, "How to Survive a 100 Ways to Survive a Hospital Stay." The first, number one, don't piss off the nurses. Then he'd go on and on. Then number 10, don't piss off the nurses. And by the end of the book, you have like, "And by the way, whatever you do, don't piss off the nurses." And a lot of the doctors put that in their waiting room.
Oh dear. I thought he was actually going to have like a list of 100, and it's like, make sure your mother knows enough medical information to save your life. And that was 1 to 100.
Well,
Exact
the
same thing.
doctor called the original doctor and reamed him a new one the next day because she said, "You almost killed this boy. He would have been dead if he stayed with you." And yeah. And she's still in our lives.
Yeah, it's amazing how the amazing ones, you never lose touch with them. I've got a few
And
memories of
then
my own.
the nurses, well, he had 10 surgeries after that. He had to they couldn't close him. For 2 weeks he was laying open with a vacuum pack in a coma.
Jeepers.
Even though he was in a coma, I whispered in his ear, "If you come out of this, I will buy you a Porsche." And the biggest smile came over his face.
Oh
So,
dear.
that was
Yeah, I
encouraging.
firmly believe that because nothing's coming out of a person, it doesn't mean things are going in. So that's great. That's the best part of
Yeah,
your
so I
story.
gave him a little toy Porsche, but he came out.
Oh, come on. I was thinking on
Buy
good.
him a Porsche.
There must have been a little 911 that wasn't too expensive. I don't know. Anyway.
Don't Yeah, compared to 9/11. Oh, yeah.
Oh no, I'm sorry. There's a Porsche 911. Sorry. It's a type of Porsche. Sorry,
Oh, and they call it the 9/11?
well no,
That's
it's been out for years. It's old. It was way
Oh.
before your 911, the American 911. So I bad reference there. Sorry. Okay, I want to stay with our audience for just a moment. We are women, air quotes, of a certain age. Many women tell themselves, I'm too old. Where does that voice come from? Is that society or what is it?
I absolutely firmly believe that the younger folks look on us as being old, dementia ridden, can't do anything, can't think properly, forget everything. And that's so not true. I mean, yes, dementia does happen, but not to everybody. And even if you have dementia, it doesn't mean you're not a valuable person. Two of my friends right now have husbands with Alzheimer's, and the way they're caring for them is amazing. I mean, they have it in them, they have the love. But one of the husbands, what keeps his mind going is he does Legos, and he's built these amazing, huge things of Legos. So even though his mind is going, he has a talent for something and it's still there. So he is a valuable person in life, even though he doesn't contribute much intellectually. But I really believe that don't put us away because we're old. Don't shove us into a nursing home. As long as we can function, let us function. I was in the supermarket. Yeah, I was in a store the other day, and I was wheeling a basket, and one of the salespeople said to me, I was going to go into the dressing room, and she said to me, "Do you need the basket for support?" And I couldn't understand why she asked me that, because she saw me not the way I see myself, I guess. I said, "No, thank you. It's okay. I'm fine."
Maybe she'd seen my mother, who loved to get the cart and she'd just lean on it and walk. And it was just this moment of laziness because, yeah, she was a walker and a bowler and all sorts of things. She was perfectly capable, but it was like, okay, this is just the way I'm going to relax, leaning on the cart, going around the store.
Was she a pole dancer?
My mother? I don't think so, but who knows? I mean, oh, jeepers, now that you ask me that. My dad in his final days had one of those bedside poles at home. So maybe after he went into care, whoa, you've really got me thinking now.
Let's try to channel her.
Nothing would surprise me about my mother. You and her would get along just great. Okay.
Now, my mother lived to 105.
Okay, mine passed 2 weeks before her 93rd. So yeah,
Oh, wow.
we both come from long lines of long livers.
My father
So,
died young, but my mother
okay.
died 105, and she was never without a boyfriend.
Okay, I'm sorry. There's so many little random bits of this conversation that women are going to go, all right, I want to be like her. I want to be like her. That's great.
Now, in fact, when my dad died, his best friend approached her and said, "I've been in love with you my whole life, and there is no reason for us to be apart anymore." And she
Except for one thing. I'm not in love with you.
and she couldn't stand him, but they did try. They did try.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's, you know what? My best advice to people is be aware of what's going on in your life because you can get excerpts every single day if you're open to it and you pay attention. If you're a
Yeah.
listener, listen.
I think that's one of the things I love most about this podcast is there's so many stories out there, and if you can't find something of interest, I don't know. I just love hearing the stories. They're just amazing. Now, I want to go in the opposite direction from our peers who are the listeners. When your grandchildren or even just younger women look at your life one day, what do you hope that they learn watching how you've lived? Because you've, excuse the expression, but you've seemed to have grabbed life by the balls.
I think they have to find their self-worth and capitalize on it. You have to look inside yourself and say, gee, there's no reason why I can't try this, or there's no reason why I can't try that. If I fail, I fail. It's no big deal. But keep rolling that ball, keep moving along, because that's what's going to create your environment and your being. I mean, if you're a negative person who's like, why me, poor me, all the time, no one wants to be around you. And you're not going to be open to people wanting to help you either. You know, it's like, I think people that are like that are very resentful of people like us.
One of the coaches that I follow online has a saying, and I'm going to butcher it, but you'll get the gist of it, of it isn't failure unless it happens in the last chapter. Otherwise, it's just a plot twist. And I like that, you know, because if I'm failing and I'm going to drop dead, okay, people might say it's a failure, but if it's just today, it looks like failure. It's actually just a plot
A
twist
plot twist. I
because,
like that.
yeah.
I
Well,
like
especially as a writer.
I might have to use it.
Please do. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about while they listen or after they've listened to us?
Well, again, I'll go back to I have been detained twice in my life, once for being a terrorist and
You're
once
gonna
for having
ruin
a,
my, you're gonna
no,
ruin
and one,
that
I'm sorry, but
question.
once for being having a bomb in my luggage.
Okay, listeners, we're gonna jump ahead because you know it's coming. Gee, Shirley, may I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You have a bit of a history of being thought a terrorist. Okay, now the stage is yours. Logan Airport.
Recently I was at Logan Airport, yes, Boston, and I called ahead because I had medication with me. I was going to Italy and I had medication that needed to be on ice. And as I'm going through TSA, they stop the machine and they pull me aside and they say, "Is that your bag?" I said, "Yep." And they said, "Well, we have to call the bomb squad." I said, "Why? You know, why would you do?" "Well, it looks like there's a bomb in there." I said, "No, it's medicine. Let me show you." And they go, No.
Yeah, right.
So then the bomb squad comes because I look like a terrorist. And I'm amused by all this because I know I haven't done anything wrong. And they pull me over to a section of the airport. God knows where I was. And they go to very gingerly open the bag. And I wanted to shout, boom, like so badly.
Yeah, right. When did you get out of jail?
No, I knew better, but I was very amused by this. And they saw it was not a bomb, but the ice had crimped and it looked like wires. And I was with my girlfriend. We were actually on our way to Tuscany. And I called my husband and I said, "You're not gonna believe this. I'm not even out of Logan Airport yet. I'm in trouble."
Okay, but the first one, this is where the Colin Powell story comes in, isn't it?
Yes, being an interior designer, I often had things coming in on cargo planes, and I had to go to the airport to pick something up off of a plane, and I had no idea where the cargo area was. It was in no man's land. So it wasn't on the plane. I said, "I'll go have dinner in the terminal and I'll come back." And as I'm leaving, I'm stopped by a state trooper. And there's a whole entourage going by. And I said, "Well, they know where they're going. I don't know where I'm going. I'll follow them." And suddenly I'm at the end of a private runway, and Air Force Two is there. I said, "Uh-oh." And I'm surrounded by Secret Service and state troopers. And I'm trying to explain to them, I'm in a van with tinted windows. I'm trying to leave and my car won't back up. And every time I try to leave, my car won't back up. And finally, the plane takes off and they all go into a building and they leave me there. And my car backs up. So I went into the service station at the airport and they said, "There's nothing wrong with your car. They were detaining you. They have a device that interferes with the electrical impulses in your car. I bet your phone is dead." I had a car phone hardwired. It was dead. And they said, "Yeah, they were detaining you. And they couldn't stop you if you were moving, but in a stopped position, they can prevent you from leaving." So this is the best part of the story. I came home and I said to my husband, "You won't believe what just happened to me. I got, oh my God, where do you hear this story?" And I tell him, and he says, "That's it. Either you give up your job and stay home, or I'm leaving you." And that's when I said, "Thank you, Colin Powell," because it was his plan. He had spoken at Harvard's commencement that day, and he was going back to Washington. We're in the middle of Desert Storm, and they thought I was going to blow up Colin Powell's plane.
Now, I'm a Canadian. I don't know the answer to this question. Is Colin Powell still alive?
Yeah, I think he is.
I'm going to tag him on this when
I
this
don't
goes
know.
live.
Find we'll ask Siri.
Oh,
We'll
dear.
ask Siri. But and just there is one more incident.
Oh, jeepers, of course there is.
I was coming from Houston, and I'm on the plane, and the guy in the middle seat is holding on to his belt like really, really tight. And right before we landed, he screams and jumps over me into the aisle. He was a mule. And whatever was in his stomach opened up. He was carrying cocaine.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I offered him a magazine, during the flight, he was just sitting there like straight up. And I said, "Would you like a magazine?" He just shook his head. No. He was scary looking. And the
And
police
did they know you
ran.
weren't traveling together?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. But we all had to stay on the plane until they got him off. And it was in the paper the next day.
Was your picture?
No.
I'm trying to juice up your story here.
Oh, I could have been if I wasn't so scared. I was scared actually, but I might have tried to administer my medical knowledge with him. I don't know. But it follows me. It just follows me. The Boston Strangler, I was a teenager. The Boston Strangler killed one of my neighbors around the corner in Boston. Killed, and I thought I think that's where I started my interest in crime, because I love true crime stories.
Okay, so this is a good segue. Two books out, the third in the works. Tell us about your books, because one of them sound, I got it on my other monitor here somewhere. The one of them was a loosely based on your dad's story. And then is the next one, the other one, Stolen Lives? Is that what it is?
That's on human trafficking. And the third
Okay.
one is going to be called Mr. Stone, and that's the sequel to Stolen Lives.
Okay, come on, put some little carrots out there.
Okay, well, the human trafficking one is about a child that is taken out, this is the beginning, taken out of her bed in the middle of the night by criminals that her father owed a lot of money to. And they kidnap her. And from that, I got a really good, I think I got a really good story. I'm a little demented, but yes. But and so the sequel to that, they didn't find out that it was because of her father's gambling debts that he couldn't live up to the cartel, that they stole this girl. And then he disappears and she disappears. She's kidnapped and they don't know where she is. And actually she was saved. She ended up as, this is all pretty early in the book. She escapes her captives that they were driving her to somewhere, and she escapes them and just gets into the woods and falls over a cliff. And it's right near a Catholic church. It's like a monastery. And one of the nuns sneaks out at night, like she did every night, to walk through the woods and hears moaning in the background. And it was Alice, the girl that was kidnapped. And they care for her, but she has amnesia. She has no idea who she is, where she came from. And so the book kind of flits in between Allison and her family. And of course, there's criminals.
So, do you ever go through the grocery? I don't know what your grocery's like, but up here, I know that's where all the tabloids exist. And sometimes, do you ever just scan the headlines and go, ah, I'm going to add that one in. I'm going to add that one into the story.
Actually, no, I don't know. I honestly can't tell you. I mean, for 3 months, I wasn't able to write a word on my new book. And I've just, like a few, a couple of months ago, I just picked it up and started to write voraciously, just write. And I can't put it down now. I'm almost, it's almost completed. I wanted to have it done by Memorial Day, but it didn't make it. But I am three quarters. I'm almost done. I'm almost done. And I know exactly where I'm going with it now, but I didn't before.
Is there another story sitting just out here saying, write me, write me?
Well, everyone is asking me to please write a happy book because this one terrorized them. This
Oh,
last one.
no.
Like one person gave me 4 stars instead of five. And she said, the only reason why I didn't give you 5 stars is because I was terrorized and couldn't sleep that night.
I'm going to be sneaking into my daughter's homes and locking the children's bedroom windows at night.
I know.
Ah,
Yeah,
dear.
and I mean, I really live a very sedate life. Well, now I do. I don't want to go anywhere anymore.
Don't have to be exciting. You create it on the page, obviously. Oh, dear. Now, do you have a website?
I do, but well, I have a business website.
Okay, so people will just go to Amazon then to find your books, or is there somewhere else you find?
Amazon, BookLocker, Barnes and Nobles, BookLocker.com is my publisher. Barnes and Nobles, anywhere books are sold, if they don't carry it, you can ask and they'll order it. It's available. Both of them
Okay.
are available. And I love reviews. Please give me reviews.
Okay.
Amazon, I think, is the best place to go because you can read the first three chapters or four chapters for free.
Oh, okay.
And then you won't want to put it down, so you'll buy it.
I will say, and this is awful, but I don't buy enough from Amazon. So even if I buy a book and then try to leave a review, they say, you can't leave a review. You don't give us enough money. I mean, not in so many words, but that's what they say is you don't buy enough from us, so you can't leave a review.
Do you have Kindle?
Yes.
It's Kindle. I mean, it's on Kindle.
I've tried to leave reviews and so I will try again.
I don't think Amazon will put up a review unless you purchase it from them, so that's
Oh yeah,
okay.
no, that's what I've done. But now I've got to decide which one of these I'm brave enough to read. Oh
I
dear.
actually think the first one, story of dot dot dot, is it jumps around various. I did a lot of research on that book, like on the Follies in New York and Ohio. I mean, I did find certain things that I really did research on that one.
Right.
Ziegfeld Follies.
I've been binge watching that program on YouTube called Who Do You Think You Are? And you start looking at people. They look into their history and their forebears, their ancestors.
Oh,
And
yes.
some of the stories just rip your heart out. And it sounds like, like that's your dad's past, is just one tragedy after another.
And he died, he dropped dead one day. He just died suddenly. Where my mother lasted to 105, but she lost her mind when she was like 90. And that was torture. That was really torture. But
Okay.
because she didn't know who I was anymore, so I didn't have to go visit her every day.
I've said that to my kids. I had a career in elder care and dementia care, so yeah.
Did you
Okay.
do?
Oh, I was in rec therapy. And I must admit I love dementia care. I just loved it. I've got one of those brains that can carry on like six different random conversations at once, so I was always good in a crowd of demented people. Okay, you are on social though.
Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X.
Pinterest?
What? I'm
Am I seeing a
sorry.
pin am I seeing a Pinterest here?
Oh, Pinterest, yes.
Okay.
Goodreads.
Okay, that's great. All right. Thank you. And thank you for letting me save that personal question and actually get it out of my mouth.
But actually, I didn't. I'm sorry, I
No,
didn't.
that's okay. Ah, dear. Anyways, the social links will all be on your page at our website. And actually, maybe I'll put, I often put a website link in the actual show notes. Maybe I'll just go straight to Amazon and people can go like, oh my God, I've got to read that book.
I had a
So.
business website, but I just canceled it because
Okay.
I don't want any more business. I don't want to do design anymore. So I took it down because I was getting
Okay.
hounded and I've had some very well-known clients in my life and I have one left and it's a constant from day one and I'm not giving that one up. But other than that, I'm retired.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah.
Listeners, I'd love to hear from you. Has Shirley reminded you of a dream that you've put on the shelf? I mean, that was a lot of years of just waiting to write, Shirley. Maybe she's inspired you to begin a new dream. That would be kind of fun. Come over to the website or leave a comment wherever you're listening. Your stories encourage other women just as much as today's conversation. If someone came to mind while you were listening today, a sister, a friend, a daughter, someone who's wondering if it's too late, please share this episode with her. Sometimes a simple conversation arrives at exactly the right moment. If conversations like this encourage you, I'd love to have you join us each week. Follow the Boomer Woman's podcast wherever you enjoy listening, and you'll never miss another conversation about embracing the journey. Shirley B. Novak, thank you for being my guest today. Thank you for reminding us that life apparently never stops offering possibilities just because we've had another birthday. I guess what staying curious, like where's that entourage going? Keep learning because that boy, that's been a theme, it seems, in your life. And keep saying yes to the next chapter. So I think that's what we've gleaned from you today. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. One just last comment that I want to make, because I've always said this to my kids. When one door closes, another one will open. That's it. And it will be better than the one that closed. I do believe in that.
Yeah, I do too. That's a really good way to end. So thank you. Have a great rest of week.
Thank you. Happy 4th of July.
Oh, right.
Oh,
Yes.
no, I'm sorry. That's not your holiday.
No, but today's our holiday. It's the 1st of July. Oh, we recorded. Okay, listeners, gigs up. Yeah, we're recording on the 1st of July, which is Canada Day. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you.